You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Cliff High back to the show.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. We're off to a good start already.
Yeah.
Cliff's work is known globally as the WebBot technology or predictive future linguistics. And if you're in Italian, if you're in Italy, that might be linguini. His periodic reports analyze and explore vast amounts of internet data, which contains thought forms predicting future events. Cliff jokingly refers to this as his rickety time machine. There's an excellent article about how all this started and how it works at George Urey's website, www.urbansurvival.com. It's also an excellent website to read on a daily basis. Cliff also writes articles, in addition to the mind-bending work of drilling down, analyzing, and making sense out of terabytes of data, at his website, which is www.halfpasthuman.com, which we'll mention again. So let's not waste a moment and welcome him to the show now. Hey, Cliff, welcome back, and how are you?
Doing just fine. We're having a nice little windstorm up here. It's a typical winter in the Northwest with rain crashing down at the rate of probably an inch an hour, that sort of thing. And we just lost the anemometer at Mount Rainier at Camp Muir after recording pretty steady winds over 130 miles an hour.
Wow.
All things considered, I'm doing really good.
Well, hopefully you won't blow away during the show.
Yeah, that's also something that I think I would like is to stick around a bit. We're normally pretty good with it, though. We've got one of these 4-inch thick cedar houses. Not quite a log home, but sort of a quasi-refined version. And they shed the wind pretty well.
Oh, good, good. How's that? You have a boat, too, don't you? I mean, how's that coming along?
Well, I've got a really cool boat, a trimaran, that I've had up to 11.1 knots on GPS and 14 knots, I swear, in a 12-knot wind. And it's just great, but I've had to not go out for a while as I make dagger boards and a new rudder for it. I simply didn't have enough wetted surface in the water to be able to control at the speed I was getting out of it, because the whole boat, I mean, it's a huge boat by dimensional size. I can tell you that it's a 25-foot length overall trimaran with a 14-foot beam, and it sounds tremendously large, but the whole thing weighs, probably with me in it, less than 1,200 pounds. And it's got 168 square feet of sail, so it really wants to move, and I just need more of a rudder to be able to turn it under those conditions.
Wow.
Yeah. But no, it's doing very well and may come in a little, it's certain to be handy whether or not we get any more catastrophic earth kind of conditions. Just the generalized collapse and the lack of oil and the need to go places, it's going to be a really nifty little boat.
Yeah, no question about that. Definitely something that if you're people on the coastline would be wise to have. I heard just before the show from a friend of mine who mentioned that there was a brewing solar eruption that's turning towards the earth. I didn't have time to check it out before the show, but this is one of the things that you've been tracking in your reports for some time now, isn't it?
Yes, since 1997. That was when I first stumbled on the idea that something is amiss out there in reality land.
Yeah.
Because I was hunting for words around Sun, S-U-N, for Stanford University Network, the company name. And I kept coming up with I thought, in fact, that I'd had an error because I kept, in my logic somewhere, because I kept coming up with thousands of instances of the larger archetype of sun, the great big scary ball in the sky. And it started, and they were all associated with disease and all of these other various negative contexts. And that's when I said, well, basically to hell with Stanford University networks, no offense, but I'm more intrigued with this other thing there.
Interesting. Of course, we know Patrick Jarrell is one of the people that is predicting, and Jay Widener also. Many people are saying that the solar maximum is going to be somewhere around 2012 or 2013, and that portends some major shifts on the planet crustally.
At a bare minimum, it'll be, even if we don't get that far, that we have a crust shift, at a bare minimum, we're looking at extremely stressful times and a stress test, if you will, of our modern-day infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Because the sun, Patrick Jarrell's work is based on some discoveries by Maurice Cottrell, among others, relating to the cycles that were tracked way back when by both Egyptian and Mayan and Tibetan civilizations. And the cycles are actually a very complex interweaving of sunspot cycles that reaches out about 13,000 years at the current rate. So we're going to have a completion that of the sun cycle that is going to be quite massive. And I understand why, when you read from the NASA releases on the subject, you find so many words that are related contextually to anxiety and fear. They can't help it. It's leaking out in everything they say. And they're actually out there warning people now, you know, get ready for big electrical problems, et cetera, et cetera. But even a little electrical problem from the sun is going to be massive on the infrastructure that's affected.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it could be, staggeringly magnificently horrific at that level, because there's evidence that suns with, and I don't know why NASA doesn't use this, by the way, to spot suns that have complex planetary structures like ours, but the harmonics of the planets out there relative to the angular momentum that is causing basically the mega sunspot cycle, where basically what happens is the equator of the sun is yanked around faster than the sun's poles by all of us planets out here and us people doing stuff. We're whizzing around really fast in a particular plate of a plane relative to the sun, and we make the equator go faster than the poles. And every 88 days, the equator laps the poles and winds the magnets inside the sun a little tighter. And every so often, like every 13,000 years, these magnets will wind up to the point where they just can't take it anymore, and they've got to reset. And there is, at the bare minimum, a giant electrical pulse that comes out as the magnetism of the sun resets itself relative to the centrifugal pull of all of the planets. And NASA could use the harmonics that are generated that cause this kind of effect on our sun to look at suns and plot whether they have complex planetary structures around them based essentially on the amount of angular momentum and the disparate rate of the equator to the pole, which affects the light. In any event, though, we're about to encounter just that sort of thing in a couple of years. Patrick Jarrell's work aligns to the December 21st solstice, and I have to agree that the powers that be went to a huge amount of trouble and spent a fortune to align the end of the Mayan calendar to that date. And they further confirmed it by what they did on January 1, the year 2000, when Clinton and all of the grand poobahs of the Western world all congregated in the area in front of the Giza Plateau, and they had some, you know, high and mighty ceremonies there. Again, confirming the calendar and the end date and so on. So, it's going to be really interesting these next couple of years.
No kidding. Well, your report just came out about 18 days ago, your most recent report, on January 25th. So we've had a little bit of time to digest it, and it's clear that, you know, from the last one and this one, that one thing that's becoming prominent is global revolution.
Yes. Yeah.
And then and the diaspora, which you talk about also, Australia is getting hit beyond belief.
Well, it's also affecting a number of other areas. I mean, we're getting another, what do they call it, beast from the east that's going to hit England and go all the way over to Ireland. And that's basically weather from Russia that, you know, instead of hitting Moscow and going over to Siberia, just decided to take a right and go across the top of Europe and smash into the UK. That weather pattern, by the way, is indicative of the same kind of stuff that they theoretically think they saw during the Dalton Minimum. So it may be preceding an ice age in the region.
Well, yes, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Well, and I've got anecdotal reports from people that are out sailing around, you know. A lot of people are interested in the fact that I have a crab claw sail on this, and they want to know the on my little boat and the pros and cons. So I've been doing some communication with a lot of people that are out and about in boats. And I've had a number of reports from the East Coast that seem to indicate that the Gulf Stream, which used to head over to England and keep it all nice and cozy, is now starting to crash in intermittently in places in the I don't want to say northeast, but, you know, south of Boston. And in that area, water that was abnormally warm after, coincidentally, the BP screw-up down in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think it was a screw-up. I think it was a by-design kind of a deal, an act of aggression against humanity.
I would agree with you 100% on that. In fact, it's almost impossible to find any major event on the planet that isn't engineered at some level behind our backs without our awareness.
Yeah, boy, these nasty fellows, they're just working their tails off, aren't they?
Yes. Well, we must be getting awfully close to something. I mean, they talk about us waking up too soon and as if there's a timetable, or that we're not supposed to wake up. And it does appear that there's an attempt to keep us and
stupefied,
zombie. Yeah. What, there's a word for it. What is it?
The shombies. Shombies, and it's a blending of sheeple and zombies.
Yeah, that's
and theoretically,
one.
It's a sheeple that's dead, and they just don't know it, and they're shuffling around like a zombie.
Well, let's hope that there's hope for those shombies.
Yeah. Well, there is, really. And the data that we've had over the past, maybe a year and a half or so, has pointed me towards the conclusion that there actually is hope, and it is the hope that the shombies have by proxy through a gradual or general awakening that is actually one of the main fears, not main fears, but a primary supporting fear that is driving the powers that be. So basically, in our work, they are really scared of something that is off-planet. We don't know what it is, and conjecture gets you any number of different reasons for them to be scared.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear words are huge relative to the powers that be in space. But a subset of that that propels that fear is their view of the giant mass of humans and the potential that we may wake up ahead of schedule, if you will,
Yeah, well, of course, there are a lot of people who are working on finding out what is actually the case about our contact with other civilizations and with back engineering fallen UFOs or UFOs that have been brought down intentionally over the years. And, of course, we know that there are so many underground bases that are off limits to everybody, including the president.
Yeah.
That you're shot on sight if you can make it that far.
Right.
That you have to wonder what's going on, and also I'm sure you're aware that the government's building underground bases like
they might be useful. Yes.
Yeah, hamburger stands flipping hamburgers.
Yeah, and it's not just a desire to keep the cement industry hale and hearty. Yeah.
Right.
If you track the cement usage, it's quite staggering what's been going on in the general building general collapse of economies since Japan went south like 20 years ago. In spite of that, cement usage has just gone on a continual upward curve, and in these past few years has bent at the knee as though it was going to had a potential to go exponential. We know it can't. Cement is a very curious commodity because, or substance, because it is a very expensive to produce relative to other materials like steel, for instance. Although expensive to produce, is not as expensive as cement. But cement has the longer lifespan, is more malleable, and for a lot of different reasons, is one of the underpinnings of our society, going all the way back to the Romans. But it has like a 10 times cost ratio relative to how far you can move it. So you're kind of constrained. You couldn't, for instance, decide to do a big project involving lots of cement in Australia or in Antarctica unless you're capable of producing it there. So that also tells you something about the centers of activity, in the sense that where suddenly there's new cement plants coming together, and these are indicated by spur lines off of railroads, usually bringing gravel. And so you can really track a lot of very interesting activity and where people are putting what. And it, you get some very curious questions forming when you look at some of this data and you say, you know, why would anybody be building a cement plant capable of producing that level way up in the mountains there? It just doesn't make sense. And new rail lines for this purpose. So they really do expect something to occur. There's a lot of data we have around the underground words and the underground cities and the safety and surety and so on. But we've now entered into a stage where probably the last 3 years we've got a conscious level of contamination around those archetypes because so many people are catching wind of something and are wondering and discussing in a conscious way underground shelters and so on. That makes sense?
Right.
So we've had to tend to discount what we're getting in under certain archetypes just because they've come to the level of conscious usage. So as we see, for instance, the forecast of the global revolution manifest with it starting to sweep around and evolve into something else, whatever we're going to call it when it's planetary, will also at that same time, we're losing the ability to really peer into that archetype anymore because it'll become too discussed.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting what you said about the something out there that they're afraid of. You know, as you said, there's a lot of different theories about what could be out there, and some people are saying that there are existing space wars going on that we are unaware of, and of course there's a big.
Well, I'm kind of one of them.
Are you?
I mean, saying
you,
that, I've seen some strange stuff up in the skies that I would not have given credence to unless I'd seen it with my own lying eyes. You know.
It's not far-fetched. I mean, supposedly this has been going on long before, you know, we were even here on the planet. So,
discounting that, just in the last 60 years, we've got a huge portion of our economy that went underground in the form of being part of the corporatocracy feeding into the military-industrial complex that went dark. And who knows what they've been able to accomplish in 60 years.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, I've heard reports that the technology that exists is thousands of years ahead of anything that we're allowed to have here on the, you know, in the
sheet. Yeah, but there's, and that's a little misleading when you think about it, but look at this. If I can conceive, this is one of the thought experiments book Mr. Fuller used to do that was very productive, and he was, his thing was the natural solution to a problem. And it was, if I can conceive of what I would like the natural solution to look like, then I can back engineer from that mental construct to see what I would have to go through to create it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've thought about in this process is that, once you get to a certain stage, you don't have to do welding anymore because you'll be able to instruct metals to grow together. And then you start thinking about it a little bit further and you think, oh, wait a second, you should be able to create composite products that are various different layers of various different types of material, again, in the same energetic form that you're using to not weld anymore. And then pretty soon it gets to the thought that, oh, hey, maybe you could just, you know, tell this big vat of titanium powder to liquefy itself and trot on over into that mold and then solidify and grow stuff, so to speak, so that you'd have... And one of the advantages of that is you don't have to envision a huge number of people being in a production facility, because they'll be able to just automate it beyond the ability of a lot of us to understand. Very much like the old cartoon stage where the Martian would show up and put down the little seeds, put water on them, and minions would spring up. You know, it's just a technology we wouldn't understand, but it's one of the things that are far less away than 1,000 years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even right now on our present course, if we don't get a big kick in the butt, we're probably less than 100 years away from growing houses, probably virtually overnight.
Yeah. I'd say even closer than that if we're not...
Exactly. Yeah, if we can come through this with some semblance of a carry level of humanity and root out some of these secrets, then there you go. But our species has repeatedly been kicked into a state of amnesia. And this last time around, the powers that be used that amnesia to keep us all as shambies, ignorant shambies in the dark, where they fed us their manure. And finally now it's gotten a bit too light, and we're seeing what they're shoveling towards us and saying we don't like it anymore.
Yeah, right, exactly. One of the things that you brought out in your report in the beginning, which I thought was really timely, was the potential for extreme or ongoing repression of thought forms and activities. And boy, you hit that one right on the head. You're aware of what's going on with the crackdown on internal terrorists in the United States?
Oh, yeah. It's a natural response that we've seen highlighted for maybe 18 months now.
And, of course, it's a matter of time before we're having to, be concerned about that. Maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah, it'll come in fairly fast. But hey, there's some sort of good news here.
Okay.
We're looking at, if we look at actually the year 2011, I was making notes and stuff here earlier, one of the things that we can clearly say is that somewhere in this year, as we progress forward, the powers that be and the rest of us are going to hit a fulcrum, and the little teeter-totter that we're on will tip the other way. And so it's kind of a race as to how far we get along that fulcrum with the powers that be trying to pull us all back and doing everything they can to keep that one side down in their favor, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one of the things that may kick that fulcrum right out from underneath the whole little teeter-totter arrangement here is what's going on relative to the currencies and its timing relative to the onset of the global revolution, because we have within our data temporal markers that indicate that the revolution is going to end up freeing data and information as well as humanity, basically. And if that proceeds fast enough, and we've seen how fast it can go once you've got the modern technology and, your Facebook and Twitter behind it all, and you have some impelling information that gets you over your emotional barriers that are keeping your butt glued to your couch, right?
Right.
Now, in Egypt, they had some very interesting internal dynamics, because their cost for food for everyone is relatively high, one of the highest on the planet. And I think it was, maybe 40% of available daily resources needed to go to food, whereas in the United States it's like 13%. And what you bought for food is immaterial. It was just an average for the population.
Mm-hmm.
However, the United States, that 13% is probably closer to 18% since the onset of just this last year in the hyperinflation that the Fed's producing, and probably within a very short period of time, certainly by the 25th of March, we're going to get to a period where inflationary impacts on everything within the borders of the U.S. will start taking on a compounding effect. It's going to get really weird, because according to our data and the way we see the systemic just-in-time collapse coming, we may get to a period here, let me see, that's what, maybe a month and a half, where we'll start seeing the reverse of the falling prices. We'll see that everybody scrambling to keep up with rising prices that will be changing on a pretty much a daily basis, from trip to trip to trip to the store, as we get hit by the combined impact of the dollar going south and basically being abandoned as the global currency, and then the actual cost of everything showing up internally here. You know, we're 6% of the population of the planet, and we consume 40% of the resources. Yeah, we've either got to learn to get along on that 6% of the resources, or figure out a way to pay for it. And, you know, the pity of it is, look at the country we're in. We're chock full of stuff we could be doing here, but our entire industry has been sold to China.
Right, right. And, of course, if you take what's going on at the top part, and I don't know what the percentages are, but it's, less than 10% control most of the, you know, the assets in the world. So we don't have to live in a poverty consciousness state. Everybody should have the ability to have food and water and free and relatively free energy, if not free. And that's the big problem that's going to happen, because the oil has been clung to for so long, and the electricity so that it can be metered. We're just on the verge of getting the technologies out there. If they'd stop killing off the people, then
you're big impediment.
Have them. Yeah. I mean, they have the technology locked away in, you know, deep vaults, yes, and they're probably using it and spaceships going to Mars and the moon, but we don't have it. So, you know, us little cartoon characters out here in the world have to kind of get by and hope that enough people come up with a similar solution at the same time so they can't kill everybody.
That's kind of the way that things work, though, in the sense that the universe is not as people would conceive of it. Because, for instance, everybody I've talked to that was in the thinking and invention business, and even if you read Buckminster Fuller's Critical Path, and I can't think of the other earlier one he wrote about his process, but everybody that's in the thinking business, they all acknowledge that they don't own ideas, and the idea, the concept of an original idea is kind of a misnomer. And the way I think of it is that I happen to have a particular set of skills that cause neurons to fire a particular way in my brain at the grosser material level. And that is represented by energetic activity at a higher level, and that energetic activity acts as an antenna for specific kinds of ideas. So there's a whole lot of ideas that I would never, ever conceive of, no matter how hard I may try and think in particular ways, simply because my brain doesn't work that way. But there's probably dozens and dozens and dozens of humans just in, you know, a five-state region here that have the same kind of thinking patterns that I do, that get a lot of these ideas, and they do different things with them, or circumstances prevents them from, you know, going and pursuing them. But that being the case, if we think of these things as waves, then every washing through of the wave for us is going to be that much larger. And I actually think that that's one of the things that the powers that be fear, is that the exponential compounding effect that humans have with each other. So, for instance, give me one element of free energy or anti-gravity, and I'll give you the other. Once we've got either of those, then the universe is ours as to be as we make it. And once we start promulgating this technology, then we could seriously, for instance, redesign humanity and how we decide to work stuff out amongst us.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with you, and plus it would be so exciting that people wouldn't want to be sitting on a couch, watching games. You know, life would be an exciting adventure that was unfolding in each moment of the now, rather than a horrible nightmare that we've created and allowed because of our passivity and a variety of other problems.
Well, we have to. I don't know that we can take responsibility that way and get to cast ourselves as victims. I'm not into that. My approach is to say that we've been duped and we've been poisoned, which impacts our neural capacities. We've been vaccinated and all of this kind of stuff, and it was all done deliberately.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of acquiescence if you continue to accept it, but I cut humans some slack because we've been sold a bill of goods from the minute we're born, and all of society is cooperating with it. So it's awful hard to break out of that.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. The generational thing that goes on with the bloodlines, the powers that be have the advantage of being around for thousands of years prior to and after our being here. So we come in forgetting, and we're kept forgetting from the moment we come in. So,
well, plus they do other things, like do everything they can to shorten the lifespan so that you don't have the ability to have multi-generational, effective, meaningful contact that way, you know?
That's right. And then on top of that, making trillions of dollars off of pharmaceuticals by keeping us alive with diseases that they create.
In order to sell you the treatment, not the cures.
Right.
And then in the meantime, they're spewing out, Alzheimer's by the ton into the upper atmosphere, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, hey, we've got to understand we've got a heavy load against us.
Yeah,
this is a very real war. We are somehow, I think, a prize in this war. That's the curious part of it. We're not a pawn. We are pawns, but that's not the limit of what humanity is going through here, because the logical thought experiments would suggest otherwise. If we were mere pawns, we would have been done away with a long time ago for being inept, basically. Yeah. But we're entering very interesting times now relative to what's going to happen locally to people in the U.S. and then throughout the rest of the former Anglo-American Empire. And what people don't understand is that what is occurring in Egypt now is the equivalent of Spain kicking out the Romans prior to the first of the major collapses of the Roman Empire. That kind of thing. It's not a tribal issue. It's a group of people that got together and decided they just didn't want to deal with it anymore. In this case, of course, we're at the center of that empire here in the United States. Mm. Even if you don't want it, believe it, ever thought about it, you participate in it just living here and paying taxes and so on. Mm. Powers that be have been using us to clamp down on the rest of the planet, and it's all falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, Jay Widener thinks that it's falling apart because the true bastards, the one that pulled the strings for the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, the ones that make them sit up and say, yes, sir, how high, those guys have left, he thinks, leaving us with just the local muscle and minions who really aren't all that competent, and so all this other stuff is starting to break loose.
And that his part of his theory, too, is that they don't, they're just operating kind of without the control that they had before, so they're kind of hit and miss.
And they're going to make different and rather interesting mistakes.
That would lead, yes, of course. And when you're living with a system that's designed to control from the top down, and it's starting to fall apart, then that seems that would unravel fairly quickly, especially when you have people vying for the top position, because there's only one that can be at the very top of the pyramid.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I don't.
Sure, the whole Praetorian Guard, you know, which colonel is it this week that's going to try and be Caesar?
Right. But I can't help but feel that that's all interconnected to the space wars that you and others are talking about and seeing that are going on, and possibly in other, I mean, I know it sounds kooky, but in other dimensions that we're not able to...
Well, lots of people say other dimensions, and from my viewpoint, that language should be clarified, because if you say another dimension, to me, that has a context of you could, for instance, imagine yourself stepping from this dimension into that other dimension as though through a Stargate kind of an apparatus or a shimmery mirror kind of a thing, or wavy air or something, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now, in my understanding of universe, what happens is this. We've got 22 trillion pulses per second coming from the middle of universe going into the basically the middle of every single item within the universe. Mm-hmm. It starts off and goes from the middle of universe and jumps into the instantaneously with no time, because this pulse does not travel through time, but travels and propels time itself.
Yeah.
This pulse comes and hits the middle of all the suns. And from the suns, it goes out to the middle of all of the objects within their solar system. Everything gets pulsed by this. So this 22 trillion times a second is the basic beat, if you will, of the universe, the basic vibratory frequency. Now, everything within the universe operates at some subset of that. And our poor brains, limited by the five-sense mind, of visual acuity basically being the limiting factor, we operate at basically, as we know from the movies, you can trick us into, if we see enough still pictures fast enough, we think there's moving action.
Yeah.
And this is movies and video, et cetera, et cetera. And so our brains operate at maybe, if you're really, 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 really good with your eyes, it may be as fast as 60 frames a second instead of, you know, the 22 trillion. So for us, another dimension is actually the 61st frame per second speed.
Mm-hmm.
For most people, it'd be 35 frames per second or 45, because their eyes don't allow them to operate that fast.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine a hummingbird, you know, flapping its wings in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
It may flap those things at 2,000 beats per second. You're not going to visually perceive them. And that's the actual other dimension. There is no other vibratory frequency that is just ever so slightly different from ours that we can't perceive it, that we could somehow step into within our body. So I don't see interdimensionality, if you will, correctly expressed in the language around me relative to what the physics are. Interdimensionality would have, for instance, the reptilians could operate at a mere 100 frames per second and still be operating 40 frames per second faster than us, and we would never perceive them. And they could be here in the same physical space, although to our frame of reference, they wouldn't be here in the same physical time.
Right.
Okay, and but that's actually what we're describing when we say another dimension.
I'm glad you clarified that, because that's one of the things that David Icke talks about a lot, and that you just put it into a context and in words that make sense, that it's a vibrational thing.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so if you could actually, you know, shove some juice into you, electricity, and get yourself vibrating a whole lot faster, you might see some stuff. Of course, it'd be, you know, maybe a one-way trip to seeing it, but hey, here's something else. The frequency of light within the material universe is variable, the speed of light. The frequency within light varies, and we can separate by way of prisms. We can separate light into various frequencies, and we call these various colors, like red, orange, etc.
Mm.
Well, in the Vietnam era, the military, from whatever source, we won't need to speculate on that, got the bright idea of using night vision devices. And these were big then, because we didn't really have the small integrated circuit boards and so on, even though they were really pushing that frontier. And the night vision devices that they used red filters. So get this, they didn't last long in the combat arena. I think they probably were on site, in country, as they say, maybe 2.5 months in total distribution only to a small number of troops, and I can't believe that they made it out of testing, but somehow they did. And they gave some of these poor troops the functional equivalent of a night vision goggles, including some helicopter pilots. And the reports that the helicopter pilots made that wore these things with the red filters were that they were seeing and reacting to objects that they saw flying around that they couldn't see with their eyes, that they said weren't helicopters and weren't bugs. And that's what the military tried to tell him, was that you're seeing bugs. And the guy says, no, excuse me, you know, I know the difference between a moth and a flying crocagator, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And because they were seeing with red, the frequency of it was such that it caused a particular feedback loop within the visual cortex just because of the red frequency. They found, by the way, to cure this, all the night vision goggles now, by the way, are in green.
Huh.
Okay, and this was, it's like red actually was superior for a lot of different reasons than the green night vision goggles that we've got now. But you would see too much of reality and you'd freak out. So, you'd crash your helicopter, which wasn't good for the military. Those were expensive.
Well, I guess people who take ayahuasca have similar experiences, too. They see a little more of reality.
And that has to do with the curious substrate of the pineal gland itself. Because
yeah.
The pineal gland, even though it forms from the upper palate, is like an eye in that it has photoreceptors. And so you got to ask yourself, why are we as beings that have evolved in light, where our skin is the... excuse me, the biggest organ we've got, and its sole function really is to deal with light, ultraviolet specifically. Why does a gland in the middle of our skull, in the middle of our brain, where there's no possibility of any light leaking in, why does it have photoreceptors? Interesting thought to ponder on. But yeah, you see things with ayahuasca because the chemical stimulates the photoreceptors of the pineal.
Yeah.
And so hallucinations are not imaginary. They're not. They're no more illusionary than the supposed reality around us that we're tricked into believing is solid by our 40 or 50 or 60 frames per second mindset.
Yeah, I
wrote this software called Vortex, which allows you to see words on a computer screen one at a time. And somebody who uses it consistently can read at rates of like 2,000 words per minute.
Oh.
So I had to get into this whole thing about the visual cortex, about the potential for causing epileptic seizures, and researched it for, maybe 11 or 12 months solid, as well as writing the software to make it work, and had some very interesting visual effects as a result of playing around with flashy lights.
Yeah.
Coming from computer screens, which is what convinces me that there's a whole substrate, if you will, of some kind of control stuff coming through the high-definition TVs.
Oh, yes.
The 1080 frames per second delivery rates.
That wouldn't be surprising at all. That wouldn't be surprising at all. I mean, where is there not control?
Well, yeah, there is that. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. There's not, unless you wear tin foil on your head.
Right,
then,
right.
That's
well, these days you'd have to be a really hard pressed to find tin.
Yeah.
You could be stuck with aluminum foil. If you're
there
lucky,
you
can get the restaurant grade.
That's right. So, all right, well, I'll forget about the tin foil hat then. But, you're right. This is what in the chemtrails going on overhead, which are starting to become known by the, people are starting to actually take that seriously now, and the genetically modified food and blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah.
And it does happen
exponentially, when you become enlightened to all of the weird stuff going on, you can't help but going out and shouting it into every ear that's willing to listen. And after a while, if they've had, if somebody's had two or three people shouting at them, they may think to themselves, maybe I'd better pay attention to this.
Absolutely.
Whereas if it was just that one nut, well, you know.
Yeah, in fact, that brings me to, I can segue into somebody who sent in a question if you'd like to answer
one. Sure, sure.
And this kind of is what relates to what you were just talking about, which some call the 100th monkey theory. Lynn from Lower Yakima Valley in Washington State asks, what are your thoughts on the studies involving 1% of the total population affecting our physical reality? Couldn't that 1% affect the unbalanced negative plans of the powers that were, PTW, for the balanced and positive?
I would agree that they could, certainly. 1% would be a huge number if it were global. Less significant if it's just national you're talking about. In the United States, in order to have it affect the reality and change things, we'd probably be talking about 3%, maybe more, maybe slightly more, because we've really been hammered by the powers that were here for a number of generations, and it's going to take us a while to shake it off. We don't, for instance, even acknowledge that we live under a dictatorship in the main.
Right.
It's a dictatorship of two parties run by the same set of banksters. And,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are acknowledging some of this. But get this. When you think about India, if you have any kind of informed opinion at all, and you think relative to how they store wealth, then you know that in India, gold is king. That's how they store wealth. That's how dowries are made. Big commercial operations take place where gold is the medium of exchange involved and so on. The same thing for silver is true through a lot of the stands, Uzbekistan, et cetera, Kazakhstan, and even over into Pakistan. In Egypt, it was a combination of both of them. Down through a lot of the Mideast, it's gold primarily. So you then look at what happens in the larger 350 million people in the United States, and you think, odd that only 2% of us or less are in any way invested in physical metals. And that gives you the idea of how many people are awake.
Yeah, that's a good point. Wow, I never thought would have thought of it like that. Well, yeah, there's a lot of monkey business going on with precious metals, isn't there?
Yes, exactly. And as a result of which, the people in India and Egypt and so on, they feel it instantly. Whereas because we don't have that same relationship to reality here, we have only 2% of our population or less that feels it and is aware of it.
Wow, interesting.
Sort of a interesting way to think about things if you look at general patterns. I love Buckminster Fuller's work in his early years when he was doing resource analysis, because if you look at these patterns in a broad brush fashion, they can tell you a whole lot. So, for instance, if there was a sudden rush in the United States for the acquisition of personal silver, and coin shops were hammered with long lines, the day I see that, then I'll say, okay, next week there's revolution in this country, because we've crossed the 3% threshold.
Interesting. Well, you know, there's the information that is coming out. I guess Max Kaiser is really pushing for people to buy silver because it has something to do with J.P. Morgan shorting silver. And
oh, sure. It's absolutely horrific. It's terrible. There are these people that have created these financial documents and mythical transactions that are using it to take the hyperinflation that the Ben Bernanke is producing with his Federal Reserve, and they are going to cause people to starve potentially by the millions in order to try and save their banker butts from the crimes they've already committed. And and in doing so, they've been shorting physical silver to the point where, get this, the latest number I've heard is that if we froze the price of silver today, it would take 5 years of daily buying for them to cover their short position.
Wow.
At today's prices.
Wow.
5 solid years, and no one else could, of the whole planet, no one else could buy silver. I mean, of global planetary silver production, 5 years.
Wow.
So this is like, okay, guys, what other planet you got in your pocket, you know? Where are you going to come up with all this silver? And it's actually, I've got some very interesting contacts I've made over the years, and there's this one particular fellow who's up in, he's actually in Uzbekistan. And he was in the silver reclamation business in the old Soviet days, where they would send him film and he would reclaim the silver chemically, process done all around the planet. As the Soviet empire collapsed, he was in kind of a backwater, but he was in a self-sustaining environment where the work he needed was fed by locals and so on, so he just kept doing it. And over the years, he accumulated quite a bit of reserves of silver. And he's been saying recently that he's been offered 30 and 40 U.S. dollar premiums for silver. In other words, whatever the spot price was, plus $30 or $40 for somebody to come on in. He's not selling. He says, no, he's not. He says, you'd offer me $1,000 over, and he says, maybe I'll think about it. But, you know, dollar, you know.
Well, and then isn't the price of being artificially kept down, and it should be higher in relation to the price of gold as well? So
in a historic ratio level, right? And we used to see gold and silver relative to the population on the planet represent a much larger portion of wealth. In other words, if you go back and look in some particular empires, Persian Empire. I can't think at the time at the moment, but following the Roman Empire collapse and prior to the big spread of Islam through the region, an ounce of gold would buy you a year's life at a very posh level. And that is to say, it would buy you enough food for a year, rent for a year, and one slave and enough cows and other things to eat for a year. So, yeah, exactly. And so in recent times, they said that, oh, well, an ounce of gold will only buy a good suit. That's mm-hmm. all changing now. So we're not only going back to historical ratios between gold and silver, which used to be 15 to 1, 12 to 1, but that's going to shift. Everybody's going to be just floored because all the time that our data has been showing $600 an ounce per ounce of silver, it's also been showing this real huge reduction in that gold to silver ratio as things proceed from that point on. So the $600 mm-hmm. an ounce silver is not a price point to sell at because price is meaningless under those conditions. It is now.
Right.
But rather, that is a temporal marker. Once you start seeing that the dollar is degraded to the point where an ounce of silver is fetching $600, then shortly thereafter, we're going to start seeing silver come down to maybe 1-to-1 ratio with gold on a global planetary scale. This will be because of the basically this same awakening that's furthering the political process and eventually will further the collapse of the powers that were, is going to produce a planetary need for gold and silver on a level that we haven't really even conceived of. So. And also, the silver's been used up in a way that's been hidden from us. There just mm-hmm. isn't as much as there used to be.
And in addition to that, China is buying up gold and silver, especially gold, like there's no tomorrow. They're encouraging all of their people to buy it.
Well, especially silver, actually. The Chinese people have always had a relationship to silver that's been very special, the lunar metal, the moon metal. Mm-hmm. And they've been, and now with their new little ETF thing, that may be the derivative problem that causes the COMEX collapse and this sort of thing. Now, our work shows here that we're going to get back into release language around March 25th. So, and that release language is going to run from then until late October. And so it's going to be quite the debacle. So if it's going to be like the WikiLeaks, then it's going to be like a huge increase in WikiLeaks sort of stuff because it runs so long. It's not merely 2 months. We're talking multiple months. So the March 25th period, I think, is probably when we'll start seeing some of the silver stuff come out, either with the big rush that shows the lines on TV of everybody standing in the coin shops trying to buy silver, or the very rapid collapse of some of the economic system.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it doesn't augur well for food either, because we've had terrible weather, we've had collapse of growing systems, we've had a huge increase in the need for oil relative to pumping out flooded fields, all of this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So food costs are going to go through the roof.
It's going to get seriously ugly.
I
heard that one of the people at one of those major banks, the evil empire banks, is actively buying up actual futures of food. I mean, actual food.
Yeah, agricultural commodities. Yeah. I've been contacted by some people that claim to work for the morgue even. and way up there, and that's what they're saying, that the karmic debt is such. The one guy is saying he's converting all of this. Well, just today, curiously, I got a email from a guy I used to work with at a large unnamed software company to the north of me here, and he finally wised up, and he's a career guy with this major software company. He took all of his 401k, converted it to cash, and it was going to go and try and buy silver. So 20 years worth of retirement he took out of the 401k system, and has just taken the hit on the penalty, and it's going to convert it to silver because the dollar is just crashing so fast.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the dollar is basically, I hate to say it, but it's worthless. It's just a piece of paper.
Yeah, we're bankrupt. 43 or 45 states, can't pay their bills. Municipal bonds going belly up.
The thing is, we're in such denial that, as you said, this is going to hit so fast it'll be like a car hitting a brick wall, and it'll just be overnight probably this will be, everybody will realize that, wait a minute, my money's in the bank, I've got to pull it out. And by the time that all happens in slow motion, you know, we'll be watching this train wreck, you know,
car after car after car piles up. Yeah.
And it's going to be quite a sight. So I think that it's wise to, you know, to invest in and take delivery on precious metals and have some real assets, you know, or buy land or something that's tangible, but especially, as you said, those items. In your report, is there anything that you haven't mentioned in the report that you see on the horizon that might be coming up to intrigue us or bite us in the ass?
Well, there's a couple of nasties that are coming on up relative to the military. Militaries around the world as part of the general awakening. So I don't suspect we'll be in Afghanistan nearly as long as Clinton et al. Do. Something that wasn't in the report but I find personally interesting is Clinton hauling back all of the ambassadors. Think of what that means. Never before have they done it. It's not like getting, well, it's kind of, to a certain extent, it has the same logistics involved as getting everybody together in a high school for an assembly. Okay, it disrupts everything. You've got to really be sure that you want to do that. You don't usually do them on a whim. The fact that we've never done it before shows you how disruptive it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you have to ask, okay, with all the modern communications, why a giant face-to-face meeting? What's being communicated at that meeting that they couldn't just put in a cable or, you know, a telephone call or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. That got me, too, curious.
Yeah. Now, the good news about that is that you're dealing with ambassadors and consuls who usually get their positions by bribery and so are not usually staunch civil service types who know how to keep their mouths shut. So I suspect we'll get some leaks out of this fairly soon. And the more shocking the news, I would expect the faster it'll leak out.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned in your report that there's a general that has things to say pretty soon. You will see. But one thing I've noticed is that when you pick out a particular person, you know, with certain characteristics, those hits are right on the money.
That's because of the way that those actually work. We have a tendency to scrub out personality and all this kind of stuff. So when it bubbles up, we really pay attention to it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. There's another question. Let's see if we can get this one in before we have to wrap it up. This person's asking about the recent tipping point having some effect or relationship with a site in Northern California, and that this would become visible sometime in February. And he wants to know if this site has become visible yet.
We don't have the linguistics. I've been looking for that. No, we haven't seen the linguistics on that hit the mainstream media yet. If it did, I would start talking about some other details relative to that. So, yeah, February isn't over, and I'm still waiting on that. And we might even be a few days off. It might be the first few days of March before we see it, but it's going to be really interesting, I think.
Well, I do remember you talking about an underground operation that was going on in Hollywood.
Right, and this is somehow connected to the major banking debacles that are going to be exposed over this whole thing, and somehow this is cross-connected to the Irish and what they do both in about 30 or 40 days and then in June. So I think the Irish are going to be to the planetary awakening relative to the global security state, you know, the hidden shadow government. Mm-hmm. I think they are going to be to that, what we just saw with the Egyptians, somehow.
Let's hope. Well, one last question from Lynn. I thought this would be a good way to kind of segue out.
Yeah.
She wanted to know, what gives you hope and gets you out of bed every day?
Well, what gets me out of bed every day is all the damn chores I got to do. What gives me hope is that I've got coffee and pie to get through.
All right. There you have it, folks. That's your answer. Chores.
That's
pie.
It. Yep.
And my favorite.
You know the old saying, by the way, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water.
Then after
enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, do dishes, scrub windows, mop floors.
I've been coming to that realization that that's about all there is.
You got it. Yep, yep. The more you know, the more work you've got ahead of you.
Absolutely. And the harder it gets.
Yeah, don't you know it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, especially when you're an old fart living in the mountains.
There you go, yeah. Or under the trees like I am.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Let's get your websites before we have to sign off, and where people can find your...
People can go to halfpasthuman.com and pick up reports there, or find the... if you look over on the right-hand side is where I have all these articles that I write and post there occasionally. You can also read about the process we've been through, both off my site and on George Ure's site. His is urbansurvival.com.
Yeah, he's got a terrific site. And you both kind of work in tandem, so I kind of get my daily information from his daily column, which is very funny and pithy and
yeah,
very intuitive, yeah, and very enlightened and very funny.
Yeah.
Also,
and he's another old fart out in the wilderness. You know, he's just out in Texas. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Now, a quick question for you here, since you have so many people that are following your work and that just, you know, want to hear from you. Where will you be chatting next? Where will we be able to hear you on the radio and so on?
I just got done talking with Suzanne Toro, so she'll post it on her site. This was just the other day.
All right.
And then I have some, sorry to say, I've been posting it on my site fairly disciplined, keeping it over on the left-hand side there, a listing of everything. But I've got another interview on the 15th and then another one on the 19th.
Great. And, of course, this show will be archived probably within the next day or two, and you are free to upload it and, you know, put it on your site and so on and so forth.
Okay. Sounds good.
Wonderful.
Sounds
well, good. Cliff, as always, it's an experience.
Yeah, for both of us.
Yeah,
imagine living
really
it.
I just love talking to you. You're just terrific. So keep up the great
Well,
work.
Thanks a lot. Yep. Pie's
and
up.
Eat lots
yep.
of pie.
Yep.
All
Talk
right.
to you later.
Take
Bye.
Care. Bye-bye.